behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. This episode is another one where I tip the cap to those who have helped shape the craft beer industry for all of us to enjoy. The Aussie craft beer scene is littered with stories of people leaving safe and secure jobs to try something new, start a new business, maybe follow a new career path, or generally throw caution to the wind and follow their craft beer dream. My guest today is one of those people, although he has kind of been pursuing his dream of spreading the craft beer gospel since he began his career as a freelance writer with The Age. James Smith has done a lot of things in the industry. Founded Good Beer Week, written 2.5 books about beer, and probably most importantly, runs arguably the most influential craft beer website in Australia, The Crafty Pint. I've asked him to jump down from his plush, shiny offices up at Crafty Towers to join me for a chat tonight. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Crafty Pint Commander-in-Chief, James Smith.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Yes, I've moved from one end of the house to the other, so I don't wake the kids. So if that counts as jumping down from the plush offices, then I'll take it.
That works for me. Now, mate, I'm just going to crack my beer here in the microphone. You got a beer with yourself tonight?
I have, and as we're, as I'm effectively a guest in Tasmania, I have... Van Diemen's Unpredictable Spring just opened next to me. So the first of his Australian spontaneous ales.
I had that tonight too.
There you go. Maybe not that unpredictable then.
No, mate, I absolutely love that beer. Will's a good mate of mine, and he sent me some of those as well. But that is a ripping beer.
Yeah, no, I just cracked just before I came on air. No, he was... poking a stick at me and Brews News and Max Allen earlier for not writing enough about that sort of stuff on Twitter. I think we do our fair share of writing about this sort of beer and brewing. So I thought I'd best try and get into his good books by drinking one of his beers on air. And I've actually just took a delivery from T-Bone as well earlier today. So I've got their nice. Bloody Hellas set next to me as well.
Beautiful
Carla popped them in the post for me, obviously, last week.
Nice.
So what did you think of the Unpredictable Spring then?
Oh, mate, I really loved it. Look, I don't have the best palate in the world, but I know what I like and what I don't like. I find it hard to describe what I'm tasting sometimes. So I just thought it was wonderful. Like there was all that sort of fruit on the aroma, like a really mixed bag full of fruit. It was crisp. It was refreshing. It's something really different with that whole idea of the cool ships and the spontaneous fermentation with the local indigenous yeast. I loved it.
Oh, and I think,
enough of the chat about Van Diemen Brewing. He didn't get on the podcast this week. We'll do that later on. But let's make this one about you, mate.
Fair enough.
I just going to say, look, thanks for jumping on. I think I've been trying to organise something with you, some sort of crafty beer healer collaboration, since I met you for the first time at Sydney Gabs in 2018, and now here we are.
Yeah, it took a while. I think I said, I'll be down to Hobart sometime soon, and that hasn't quite happened yet. I think it's the challenges of a very large country and a very busy beer world, and just trying to work out where I'm going to be next. But, it's great to finally make it through.
And I live at the arse end of the world.
I know, but what a beautiful arse it is.
Mate, let's take a walk down memory lane together. Where did you first get the idea to become a beer writer, and were you mad?
I'd like to think if I was, there was method to the madness, but I think it was one of those things that came about through circumstance as much as anything. So I'd been working as a journalist for a newspaper in the UK, and then my wife and I decided to move out to Australia, wanting to check out life in Melbourne. And I figured, I'd just end up getting some work with one of the papers here or freelancing or what have you. Being in print journalism, it's not been the best decade or so for print journalism. And I guess, it's been a real struggle over here as well. So I ended up pitching to all sorts of people and getting a fair bit of work here and there, just doing whatever came up. And then at the same time, I guess my longest longest sort of standing mate in Australia now is Tom Delmont, who was at Mountain Goat at the time, now Fixation. Met him pretty early on, ended up going to Mountain Goat Brewery with him one Friday night. And I was like, hang on. There's breweries here in Australia, beyond this, the ones we've known about. That was one of the things I was expecting to sort of give up when I was leaving the UK, was, give up access to, a wider range of quality booze. I'd been a bit of a real ale drinker back in the UK. And then from there, started playing for the Goat Indoor cricket team and met some other people from other breweries and realized there was something going on, and then jumped online to find out more, and there was no up-to-date information, and some of the information that was out there wasn't correct, and breweries were claiming to be breweries that didn't actually have a brewery and all this kind of stuff. So there was an interest in, oh, here's something I didn't know existed, and also people aren't necessarily being honest about it. And over time it was like, well, I haven't got enough work to survive. There's this thing going on in the beer world that needs someone to write about it. And you kind of put those two together. And it took a while for it to happen, but happen it did. And yeah, it's just been pretty crazy, really.
Nice stuff. So what were the stories you were writing like back in the day when you first started?
I should actually take a look back. I think for a few months before fully live, it was like a sort of blog version of The Crafty Pint, where there'd be a story up every few weeks or whatever. But and I think, you know, where the site sits now is essentially what the concept was back in the day, with a few extra bits added on. But it still would have been, I mean, you've got to think about it. It was only not even 10 years ago that I launched the website. And, you know, if someone was doing a barrel-aged beer, that was remarkable. You know, if there was a collaboration going on between two breweries, that was a, you know, a massive story in itself. In fact, one thing we're looking to do soon when we find the time is a feature on collaborations and how, you know, when Mountain Goat collaborated with Thornbridge on the Thorny Goat back in 2010, I think it was, that was huge.
Yeah.
You know, and now collaborations are part and parcel of what happens day in, day out, you know, and to sort of look back at where the first ones were. So, I mean, there probably wasn't as much going on, and there was probably, you didn't necessarily need as much to be happening for it to be a story as you would today.
Yeah, fair enough. And like, so it was back in 2010, did you know then that this craft beer thing was going to be a pretty big thing, or how long did it take you to get that inkling that, oh, I think I might have made the right choice?
I think there was always this sort of confidence that something was happening and that it wasn't going to go away. I think, you know, certainly for the first few years I was involved with Crafty Pint and the industry and Good Beer Week, I always very firmly believed it was going to happen. But there was a lot of people, I think, outside the beer bubble that were convinced that it was just a fad and it was going to fade away. I mean, if you think about the first wave of craft beer that sort of predates my time in Australia quite significantly, you know, there was quite a rise through the late 80s into the 90s, and then pretty much everything fell away. And I think people just thought, this is going to happen again. It's just a bit of nonsense, really, or a bit of a fad, and it's never going to take off. But I never believed that. But having said that, I don't think anyone expected it was going to go like it has in the last probably 3 to 5 years, where it's really accelerated beyond, you know, in every sense, it's accelerated beyond anyone's wildest imagination. But certainly, you know, I think for the first few years, and with Good Beer Week, it was a case of convincing people that craft beer, or whatever you want to call it, was actually a real thing, and it was worth paying attention to, and it was serious, and it wasn't going to go away. And I think probably by sort of 2013, 14, that sort of hurdle had been overcome. And then since then, it's just been, I guess, you know, it's just the challenges have probably changed for the beer industry. There's probably more of them, and they're moving in different directions. And it's a pretty fascinating time, and I don't think anyone really knows where it's going to end up.
Hey, you mentioned a second ago talk about convincing people. How did you go about convincing your wife to go all in on a website about craft beer?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, to be honest, I mean, she deserves a lot of credit for this, because back in the early days, she's a teacher, and so she managed to get a full-time gig pretty quickly after we moved over here.
Yeah, okay.
And I was, like I said, I was pitching, I think the first article I ever had commissioned over here was a story about a 150-year-old fifth-generation wooden boat maker and repairer in Williamstown. which I wrote for Australian Heritage magazine. There was all kinds of stuff that I was doing. And certainly, I mean, Good Beer Week, once we came up with that idea, I didn't get paid for the first 3 years of doing that. And even the 2 years after that, before I stepped down, it was kind of nominal, you know. So there was a lot of patience on that side. So her income certainly helped us survive while I was building it. And it's probably only been the last maybe 3 years that all my income's been sort of beer derived. Without her sort of keeping us going, I'm not quite sure what would happen, to be honest.
How good are our wives, really?
Oh.
Yeah, I've got a great one too. Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation, because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Hey, I spoke with the Brews News guys recently, and we talked about that idea of the harsh financial reality of trying to make a living in this industry, like in the journalism space.
Yeah.
My takeaway from that is that you're not in this to be millionaires, and there really has to be an element of doing this for the love of beer.
I think so. I mean, I also, God knows what I do now, having spent so long doing this and building it up to where it is. And, you know, there's people that a greater or lesser degree now rely on me to pay their way. So, I mean, it is. And I think, you know, the whole industry for the most part is working on small margins. And, you know, the way that, you know, I've set up the business, you know, with a lot of breweries and venues can choose to pay listing fees, but it's a lot of very small amounts of income coming in to make an income that can afford another writer and can afford a sales guy or whatever. And so it's kind of a very hard way to do things. But, you know, if I want to be operating in that sort of craft beer space and not dealing with people that aren't within that space and, you know, not taking money from where it might be and not taking advertising that isn't relevant to what we're doing or whatever, then, you know, that's the choice you make. And I guess the choice you make is that people know that you're doing it for the right reasons and that, you know, you're genuine and you don't bend from your values. And I think, you know, that's probably a key thing that's helped Crafty Pint get to where it is. I think people know what our values are and they understand that, you know, this is who we are and how we operate, and we try and be fair and we try and be honest and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, with that does come the fact that you're going to turn down opportunities that, you know, don't fit with what we do. But I think hopefully by doing that in the long run, you know, it leads to greater opportunities. I'm always saying to my wife, you know, we're building, but eventually it's going to pay off. And I'm almost 10 years in now going, still building, honey, still building.
It feels like you're flying now. From the outside looking in, I mean, you've got a great mix of staff and freelancers and you've got great content. And look, in my opinion, you'd be the number one Aussie craft beer website. So yeah, from the outside in, looking in, it looks awesome.
I was going to say, I think one of the things I realized actually, I've had a month in the UK recently, and often when I go away, whether it's overseas or interstate or whatever, if it's for a period of time, I still stay online and working every day. But, you know, you're never going to have as much time to dedicate as you would when you're back, you know, on home turf. And you kind of expect to see things falter a little bit. But that month I was away, it was like we had a great month on Crafty Pint, great stories, like, you know, audience growth, all that kind of stuff, which I didn't expect. And I think it just shows that I'd, you know, like to say thanks to the team. You know, Will Zeeble especially, really sort of stepping up and keeping things going. And that was kind of reassuring that I can have some time away and, you know, there's people there. There's a safety net now. It's quite reassuring when you know that's starting to take shape.
You mentioned before, like, opportunities around Crafty Pint. What kind of opportunities does Crafty open up for you? I mean, I think one time we were emailing and you were going on a bus trip into the Victorian countryside to visit breweries or something like that. Do you get to do lots of cool stuff?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I sort of, if you look the other way, I try and pay my writers well. I haven't been a freelancer for years. I try and make sure people are looked after and they get paid on time and everything. But one of the things I always say to them is I can open doors for you as well, because, you know, you get to know a lot of people in the beer world and you can sort of say, hey, so-and-so's writing for me and they're coming to visit. And, you know, like, the beer world's a pretty open and collegiate and friendly place anyway.
Yep.
But there are plenty of, I guess, opportunities that come along. I don't often take them myself these days because I've got so much on and got two young kids at home. But, you know, if, say, it's a Stone and Wood Brew Day or, you know, there's a brewery launch or something, I'll speak to one of the other team members and, you know, send them along. So there's plenty of that stuff. I mean, there's some things we don't do because it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, cool.
You know, you can't pay for stories on Crafty Pint. So if someone, you know, if it feels like there's something, a quid pro quo is expected, then, you know, that comes into the equation. But, you know, for the most part, I then look at it and go, well, hang on, I throw parties for the industry and we shout free beer. Is that right? You know, you know, but generally, you know what the beer world's like. There's a lot of open doors. There's a lot of friendly people who want to just sit down and catch up and talk shit over a few beers, I guess.
No, fair enough. Can I get a little bit serious with you for a second?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Look, Yeah, beer adventures are awesome, and that's a real benefit of being in the industry. But on the other end of the scale, something that seems to be a little bit topical right now is the idea that working in the industry and also really enjoying a beer can lead to maybe sailing a little too close to the wind in terms of alcohol consumption. I know the Brews News guys have discussed this a few times, and Jane from Two Birds did Dry July after recognising she needed a break. How do you see yourself in this light?
Yeah, well, we did a feature on it. I think it was late last year, actually, just a big issue thing on drinking. And that was led by one of my writers, Judd in Sydney, who, he's something that he's sort of looked at from the outside. And we spoke to people like brewery owners, and I was actually one of the case studies in there because it is tough. And to be honest, I've actually counted up the number of new beers that have been sent or dropped off at my house since I got back from the UK 11 days ago. And in terms of individual different beers, not even if people have dropped off multiples, 59 beers have been dropped off here in 11 days. And clearly that's not sustainable.
Shit.
And normally, Will would be here to share them with, and we're always looking to take extra writers on. But one thing I started doing this year is I keep a note of every single day I have a drink or I don't have a drink, and I make sure that I have more days off than days on. And so even if I have 100 mils of me sampling two or three different beers to write about, then that counts as a day on. And yeah, I just keep very, I think I'm about 4 in credit at the minute. I went to a 50th at the weekend where there was unlimited free wine and beer, and I went through the night not drinking. I drove everyone there and back. So I was like, I've got to have a day off. I actually keep a very, very strict record of the days I drink and don't drink. And it's something that I think I have to do. And occasionally it means you almost have to try and squeeze a whole bunch of beers into a sample on one night. And if we do that, I'll try and make sure there's two or three of us around the table. So you've got multiple palates, that aren't, in case you can get palate fatigue. But a lot of it means you almost end up drinking for work and sacrificing a bit of social drinking to stay sane and stay healthy.
Yeah, and I'm very mindful of it myself. I know that I try and not drink at all during the week, he says as he sips on his can of beer with you on a Thursday night. But I think you just got to, because it is a pretty slippery slope, isn't it?
I think so. I think the good thing is there's a lot more awareness about it now. And I think if someone has a problem, someone might tap them on the shoulder and have a chat, or there's certainly more discussion around it. And I think that comes with it being a maturing industry. And I don't know whether there is an issue with more drinking in the beer world than outside of the beer world. There probably is a bit more because it's around the whole time. But I do think there is more discussion and more awareness because, it ties into mental health as well. There's been, discussions around mental health. There's been some pretty tragic cases in the last few years. And I think, it can be part of a piece. The industry is maturing and that brings challenges, but it also brings, I guess, a greater wisdom as well in areas like this. And people are being a bit more, okay, yes, we still want to have fun while we're doing this. And yes, it's a fun industry to be in, but, look after yourself and, don't be an arsehole and get yourself into trouble and get messy.
Absolutely. All right, serious stuff over. Let's change the pace back a bit now. You recently released the Best New Beers of 2019, the So Far edition.
Yep.
And in the top four came from some of the hottest breweries in the country right now. You had Stone & Wood with Counterculture, Green Beacon, Bolter and Bent Spoke. Now, you gather votes from all sorts of beer identities around the country, about 350 of us. I just want to know, did anybody pick that top four?
I don't think anyone would have been able to, because the way we do it, I have to say, I think we put the invite out to 350, but we probably get responses from around about half that. I think you do the wide, cast the net wide and then chase as many times as you can without pissing people off. Yeah. But I think because we said to people, pick your top five from within your own state or territory and then your top three that you've tasted from interstate. So, but and like we said in the intro, the breweries that have greater reach are likely to do better. But at the same time, when those three beers at the top were quite considerably ahead, I have to say, the for a limited release barrel aged imperial stout, the Descent 19 did amazingly well from Bent Spoke. But the other thing, as we also said, there's going to be so many good beers that come out that might be tap only at a brew pub, and no one's ever going to know about them. But it's like the band who, for whatever reason, never get signed or never make it big, and they've made two wonderful albums that have been heard by their mum and dad and their mates.
Yep.
And you have to accept that's the case. But you do these things as much as anything. Well, being selfish. to remind me of just what's actually been out in the first 6 months of the year. Because if you're getting 59 beers delivered in 11 days, that's a lot of beers to go before the end of the year, and you're trying to remember for the whole year. But also, I think you do get a bit of a feel for what sort of styles are coming out and you know what's being done interestingly.
Yeah. I find it interesting that each year we hear punters complain about the Hottest 100 being a bloody popularity contest and whinge that people don't that the people that are voting don't have a clue and all this sort of stuff. But with your poll that's decided upon by people who arguably do have a clue, the top three Hottest 100 brewers were in the top four for your poll as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you look at it, you know, those brewers, yes, they have reach. Yes, they, you know, have, you know, good marketing. And well, I mean, I have to say, you know, Bent Green Beacon don't have the budgets of the other two at the top. Yeah. But they're just, you know, consistently great smashing beers. Out great beers. But I think it's not just hype with them because, as I think I might have said in the article as well, like those three breweries, have picked up so many champion brewery awards in the last 3 or 4 years. It's not funny. Whether they're judged by making beers that are hyped beers or whether they're beers that the masses love or whether they're beers that experts are judging to be great beers blind, however you look at it, like they're doing a good job. And so, you know, there is this thing, you know, you see blowback against Stone and Wood because they've become so big, or you see blowback against whatever. There is a bit of this thing within the noisy part of the beer world where as soon as something becomes sort of big and successful, then you've got to shout it down. And that's a way of, you know, hyping your own beer cred online or whatever. And I think, you know, fair enough. But
I don't subscribe to that.
I think there's a reason why, you know, these breweries are consistently doing well across all polls because the beer is good and the package is good. People have a right to have their opinions, but I think, you know, it probably ties into that tall poppy syndrome. You know, once something gets so far, you feel you have to try and knock it down.
And then what about position number five? My mates, the little engine that could, the Batch Brewing guys with Campos Coffee for their milk stout. Bit of a surprise.
Yeah, well, that was one... where like it's very hard to work out exactly how you work out the placements because, you know, you're looking at, you're trying to weight things a little bit if there's a lot of beers around about the same in terms of what the reach was and blah, blah, blah. But that was one where the beer hardly went outside the state, but it got so many votes from people within Sydney, you know, and it's like, okay, yes, they're much loved for what they've done in the community, but if that many people who know beer in that state love that beer.
Yeah.
Same with Oak Law from Indian Ocean in WA, then that's a sign that it's got to be quality. So I've said to some of my writers up there, can you please hold on to some Campos milk stout for me? I've got a bottle of Oak Law waiting for the right occasion to be cracked with friends. But it was one where, you know, it might not have had nearly the same votes as, say, the top three, but when you get that many people who are in, you know, in the know in that state voting for a beer, then clearly it's got something going for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Chuck and Chris for that one. Mate, how much work goes into compiling one of these articles?
Oh, it's a fair amount. And I think this year it came out later than it did because I was overseas in the UK. And so, you know, we would have started early June putting out all the invites to people and then sending out reminders and chasers and then trying to put it all together. I think it was one of those things that probably could have been, all the votes were probably in by early July, but trying to manage family time whilst being overseas with my work hours and keeping things going. I was like, that's going to take me a solid few hours to actually get all that into shape. And when I actually got, I think I wrote it the first or second day we were back in Australia, and it was pretty much an entire day. Even once I'd got all the stats worked out and I'd sent the top table plus the individual state ones and stuff to people I knew in and writers and stuff around the country to say, look, are you happy with this? This is where I've ended up. That was all done. And even then, when it comes to actually just writing the article and putting it all down, it's pretty much a day's work. So I don't know. But I think, you know, it's worth it. Like, you know, for, I guess the whole thing of Crafty Pints of an extent is trying to create a bit of a time capsule of the industry over time. And I think these articles act in as a sort of mini version of that as well. You know, yes, we're not talking about every beer that's been released that year, but it's a reminder of, hey, yeah, that was a really cool beer that came out then. And you can almost look at how sort of styles are changing. Like if you look in the lower reaches of that 20, the number of, you know, double IPAs or hazy IPAs in there is pretty high. But that's, you know, you look at what a lot of breweries were putting out for the first half of the year, and you know, a lot of breweries have been trying to perfect those sort of beers.
Mate, you write so many different styles of articles on Crafty. Like, you know, you got your new beer reviews. You talk to icons in the industry. You might be uncovering a brand new brewery or a new region, or those articles that sort of shed light on a more serious issue in the industry. Of all the articles that you write and curate, what's your sort of personal favourite in terms of style and content?
I just like to have the time to write something myself, to be honest. But I know the articles I probably enjoy. The articles I probably enjoy reading the most. If you get a really beautiful piece of writing about something interesting, like last year, Jono, who writes for me in New Zealand every now and then, he sent a beautiful piece on Kraftwerk Brewery.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've heard about it. It's a tiny little brewery in this South Island, run by this amazing couple who live in a different era and make these wonderful sort of Belgian-inspired beers.
Yep.
And he just really encapsulated what they were about, and it was just a beautiful piece of writing. I love it when something like that comes in and I just get to put it on the page and go, that was fantastic. The problem is they don't necessarily get a huge amount of traffic because no one cares about it. Yeah. People just care about bad news and lists. Yeah. and milkshake IPAs. So hardly anyone might read it, but I take pleasure in that. But I think also something we'd like to do more of, and it's a case of finding time, is when you address the sort of the bigger issues, like, you know, when there was the blow up over Southern Bay with their homophobic posts.
Yep.
Earlier in the year, you know, I guess it was kind of, the story sort of broke pretty quickly, and we'd sort of, you know, there'd been other issues like that before. And I was like, I didn't really want to just tell the story of what happened, just say, this has happened, isn't it bad? Here's some reaction. It was like, well, what actually does this story mean? Why is it bad? And it turns out that Scott, who's sales, customer relations, or whatever it is for me, he was one of the first people to react and comment online, and he started getting viciously abused. Oh, so I said to him, look, come and work with me tomorrow and just, you know, don't be on your own, and we'll just, you know, just be around people that, you know, and like. And we spent the day, you know, I was trying to chase up comment from, you know, various LGBTQI associations and people talking about the effect of social media online, all that kind of thing. And got to the end of the day and I'm still struggling to get hold of people. I'm like, God, it's almost 2 days on now. We haven't done anything on this. And I was like, well, hang on, Scott was the guy that was right in the middle of this. So I just rang him and said, look, would you be interested in explaining, you know, why this matters to you as a gay man in the beer industry? And yeah, he just let it all pour out. And that, I think, was, you know, that was a really amazing, in all the, not necessarily in a good way, but it was amazing to be involved in that and have something, tell a story that went beyond the beer world and just sort of went, this is actually why it matters. This is why, you know, and the annoying thing is there's been a crappy post by Illawarra Brewing today that, you know, isn't maybe on the same scale as that, but you see it's still happening. And it's like, come on, people, you know, wake up and try and be better than, be better than that.
100% agree. 100% agree. Now, mate, with all this stuff going on, how the hell have you found the time to write 2.5 books? You had The Great Australian Beer Guide, The 150 Great Australian Beers, and the collaboration with Luke on Bottle, Can and Keg. Are they a labor of love for you, or just an absolute 100% all-out massive cash grab?
If it had been a massive cash grab, that would be fantastic. And in terms of cash for effort and words, it would probably be equivalent to working free for Good Beer Week for 3 years. And I have to say, with the stuff with the book with Luke, actually, I put Luke together with Hardy Grant to do the book, and the stuff that went in from me was actually updated stuff from before, so that book was, you know, it was pretty much Luke's baby. The first two, because the first one actually, it wasn't just a lot of.
I've got the first one.
Yeah, well, the first one wasn't. It wasn't even just a lot of time and effort. Was the fact that just before, was it as I was starting to write it, or just before, I ended up getting this really. I got basically a herniated disc in my spine, and it was very severe, and I couldn't move, and I was in constant agony, and I had to go and see specialists, and they had to put me on stuff that was far stronger than Tramadol, and the advice I was given by the senior specialist at Royal Melbourne was okay. He goes, because of where it is in your back, we don't want to operate on it unless we have to. So what I suggest you do is you go home, you find the position that is the least painful, and you stay in that position. And I was like, That's no, what sort of advice is that? That doesn't make me feel any better. So that book was effectively written with me dropping in and out of sort of consciousness, taking these painkillers, dictating my thoughts on beers into my laptop, and then sort of realizing the screen was just swirling all over the place, dozing off and then waking up and starting again. So that was a interesting one. And actually, when I then came back to edit it, I was reading back going, I don't remember even thinking that, but I really like that bit of writing there. So maybe that's a recommendation. Take strong painkillers when you're writing stuff. But no, I mean, there is a lot of time and effort goes in. I think it was something that was important to do at the time as well. And to keep doing is that, you know, people consume information in different ways. And, you know, the more you can be putting quality information out about what's happening in the beer world and genuine and honest and true information, that more people might see in different ways, the better. You know, the more people that, whether they're doing podcasts or writing about beer or doing short videos or hosting events or writing books, whatever it is, the more it helps the beer industry that we know and love become more respected and more well known.
Absolutely,
I guess.
Mate, I like the cut of your jib. Great stuff. Would you do another book?
Not at the minute. I think Hardy Grant were looking at doing something every couple of years, and I was like, I really can't do this again. Crafty Pint. I mean, the reason I stopped being festival director of Good Beer Week was after I was just like, Crafty Pint was suffering, I think, so I was trying to do the two things, and I had a second kid coming as well. I was like, okay, this has to be the last one. And also, I think Good Beer Week with the team around me got to, well, I say around me, I was part of a team. It was certainly, I wasn't the main person. It was at a position where I could step away, and I think with I knew there was enough, you know, I knew Luke was capable and good enough to take over writing the book. And I just had to really focus 100% on Crafty Pint. I could now do with a second me to help run Crafty Pint, to be honest. But never say never. I'd love to find the time to write something that wasn't about beer, like write a kid's book or something like that and just be done for a while. But I think there's a long way to go before that happens.
So, mate, what is next for the Crafty Pint? I mean, we did talk about maybe a podcast you could do, or what are you going to do?
Well, I think it's a case of, I guess, focusing on where we are. So having, you know, I've got Will on pretty much full time. He does some stuff with Reuters as well. I've got another writer in Sydney doing sort of, I guess, he's on a wage as opposed to everyone else being on a sort of per article basis. And I've taken on this sales customer relations guy. So I've now got a bit of a bigger team around me. And I think it's a case of going, right, let's get this working really well. It sounds boring, but it has to happen. Like, let's get the fucking processes worked out. Let's make sure we're doing things the best way we can. Let's get through my bloody to-do list. you know, and basically just get everything working really well as it is. We're going to tweak the look of the website, and, you know, which should have happened a while ago, but as you know, these things always take time. We're relaunching the Kabar website. We're relaunching the Crafty Pint app to incorporate the Crafty Kabar. So there's all those kind of things going on in the background. But I think really it's just polishing what we do as Crafty Pint and just making sure that the content is as good as it can be. You know, there's a lot of big things we really want to get our teeth into, or long-term projects. And for the time being, until we've sort of got a few other things done, it's very hard to sort of dedicate the time and mental energy that's needed for that. But so really just focusing on making what we do better. I mean, you said earlier, you know, how from the outside it looks great, and that's lovely to hear. But from the inside, I know there's a lot more that I want us to be doing, and, you know, that we could be doing. Hopefully you'll just see more better Crafty Pint stuff. And on a personal level, hopefully I'll sleep more and work less at some point.
Mate, it all sounds pretty good to me. Now, mate, I've probably taken up enough of your time tonight. Do you think you can stick around for the Fast Five?
This is the bit I'm terrified about. I've listened to a few of these before, so hopefully you're gentle.
I'll be gentle on you. All right, mate. Your time starts now. Has beer ever led you astray, and can you give me details?
Oh, I think beer has led many people astray, and I've probably led many people astray as well. We can talk about it over a beer sometime, maybe.
Sounds good to me. Who's the most famous person you've ever shared a beer with?
Oh, I think there's been... I used to do a fair bit of writing about music, so I remember having a pint of bitter with Guy Garvey from Elbow at a music festival years ago.
Many times. Hello, 1990s. Him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think we would have had a drink with the Flaming Lips back in the day at Albert Hall. We managed to blag ourselves backstage and hang out with them for a bit. So you don't get in my mind, you don't get much bigger than
that. Nice. What has beer done for you that nothing else has in your life?
Oh, it's given me a living in Australia where I can work from home get sent 59 beers in 11 days.
Okay, you win. What is the best beer experience you've ever enjoyed?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I think, to be honest, there's probably been so many that you know you could sort of almost forget. I love even when I just go interstate and me and Rice has just go on a bit of a brewery crawl like when you do Sydney's Inner West. But I think the best experience I've ever had was I had just under 3 days in Belgium about 2.5-3 years ago. And thanks to some very helpful people over here, I managed to get some really good contacts at like Brasserie de la Senna and Cantillon and Struss and a few and Rodenbach. And that was just remarkable. Like the experiences I had within those 3 days, I don't think you could replicate that in 3 months anywhere else in the world. Just the history and the people I met and the beers and just, it was just phenomenal. And I had my dad along with me who doesn't really know that much about beer at all. And so we were, Jean Van Roy came out and was like pouring stuff from his unreleased beers from my dad's going, so why is your beer so cheap? And just asking all these sort of salesman type questions. And it was like completely different conversations. Like he started talking to Rudy from Rodenbach about my mum loving to drink Sauvignon Blanc from the supermarket. And I'm like, this is not how it was supposed to be. But it sort of added to the, it was just, if I'd gone with a bunch of beer nerd mates, it would have been a very different experience. So that was pretty wonderful.
Nice. And what's the most important thing you've learned in your craft beer journey?
Well, I suppose other than learning to balance the drinking like we were talking before, I just think, be true to yourself. I think whether you are, if you're a brewery, you can't fake a story. You can't make up a story and then stick to it. You've got to know who you are and what you are and stick to it. I think I try and do that with Crafty Pint. And I think it's one of the things that's going to be really interesting. This era we live in now, and it's a shame we didn't really get to talk about this, but then again, we'd have been there all night. This whole sort of era we're in now, it's madness, really, in terms of all these crazy new beer stars and breweries knocking out so many new beers all the time. Yeah. My fear is that some breweries will forget who they are or what they are because they're chasing that next sale or that next, chasing the next style. So I think, be true to yourself and, know who you are and stick to who you are and your story is probably the key thing.
Yeah, nice. And all I'm hearing from you there is that you want to do a follow-up interview at some stage on the Beer Healer interviews. That sounds great, mate.
let's make it, quarterly.
And my last question is, can you help me get Chris Hemsworth on the podcast?
I'm not sure I can. I'd have more luck with Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips, I reckon, than Chris Hemsworth, but, I'll see.
Good one, mate. Well, mate, I'll let you go tonight. We've sort of gone over the time limit, but I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat. It's been fantastic, mate. You do a lot of great stuff for the craft beer industry. I love the Crafty Pint and love everything that you guys do. Just want to say from someone who just loves craft beer, thanks very much for doing what you do. And hopefully we will talk again soon for part two, but cheers to great beers.
No worries. And when are you going to start writing for me?
We've spoken about this. And I'm not as good at writing as I am at speaking. So I don't know, mate. Maybe one day. Maybe I'll do a guest article one day.
We'll find a way. I'll persuade you over beers in Hobart sometime.
It'll be a 200-word listicle.
Well, that's what the people want.
They do. All right, mate. Thanks very much. Have a good one.
No worries. Cheers, Chris. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?